Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. My good friend and colleague, Dr. Lori Buckley, is my guest once again. Her book is 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. What an excellent book. Welcome to the program again, Lori. It's so nice to have you back.
Oh, thank you, Diana. It is a pleasure to be back. I appreciate you asking me.
Oh, you're so dear. And a little bit of history about Dr. Lori and Dr. Diana is that we both narrated a sex education video in two parts, Great Sex for a Lifetime, which you can get at bettersex.com. And so viewing volumes 1 and 2 can launch all kinds of conversations. And these particular sex ed videos really, well, they've won awards already, but haven't they been successful, targeted at baby boomers?
Oh, they're so fabulous. And like you said, it is. I think that the best value of them is to be able to have a resource to start some important conversations. So there's some really good information there. And I think conversations that a lot of couples not only need to have, but would like to have, but don't know how to start them. So it is a wonderful resource, and I know you use it in your practice as I do, and clients love it. They're really, really fabulous.
So Great Sex for a Lifetime, people can get them at bettersex.com. I loan them to clients, and then a lot of times they say, oh, well, we're going to buy our own copy because it really has been useful. Inspiring, not just starting conversations, but getting them, because I ask them to stop after each chapter or segment and talk about it. And I even give them a review kind of sheet. Seeing this video, I felt happy, angry, not at all, somewhat, you know, those sorts of things, so they can...
I know, and I love that idea. Remind me to ask you for a copy of that, because I'd love to use that. It's such a great idea. Well, you know, and it talks about, what we're here to talk about today is a lot of myths or limiting beliefs that get in people's way of having an enjoyable sex life, among many other things that get in the way. And
right.
I think that video alone just really puts the truth out there. And it goes against what a lot of people believe about sex or about getting older in sex, which we've talked about a lot because we're big fans of getting older and having sex since we're doing both.
Yeah, we both are because we're practicing it. We preach about it and we practice it too.
Exactly. So we know it's possible.
So one of my favorite Dr. Lori questions, and I remember you're sharing this with me some years ago, that you ask at a first session with a couple is, when was the last time you two had any fun? And that's such a good question.
Yeah.
And I have adopted that because I think it's good, because performance anxiety, pleasure anxiety often get in the way. And so that's going to be Dr. Lori's and my focus for this program today. Performance anxiety, pleasure anxiety. So many people wonder, how am I doing? And so
I'm cutting you up, but the word doing, it just sparks something, right? There's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. Yeah, too many people are doing rather than experiencing or enjoying or being.
Precisely.
Yeah, and so that's it. When we talk about anxiety, it usually is around the doing, the doing, the thinking, the worrying, the trying to do something or be something that maybe you feel you're supposed to be, or your partner's supposed to be or should be, and it's not happening. So it starts to put a lot of pressure and anxiety, and all of those things get in the way of pleasure in anything, certainly sex.
And sexual pleasure anxiety is really common. You and I have seen it a lot in our practices. A lot of people have been trained in childhood to fear sexual urges. So it goes way back. So let's talk about some of the history that often contributes to resisting sexual pleasure. For instance, I'll start. I'm remembering a single man in his late 30s, a client, and he told me that when his father was a little boy, his mother locked him in a closet for several hours after catching him masturbating. And so the client, was able to trace his own sexual hang-ups to that particular, well, it was a sexual trauma endured by his father. So these are powerful things that can be multi-generational patterns that somehow then get locked into people's bodies.
Absolutely, which is another reason. It's one of the reasons, one of many reasons, that I'm so glad that you do this show. So not only are we, you know, really informing people and enlightening people, I hope, to get a better, more realistic version of what sex can be and what it is, but we're also helping them really carry that message over to their children so we can have, you know, healthy sexual children. Well, when they are adults.
Yeah.
We want them to grow into healthy, you know, sexual adults. Absolutely. And those messages that many of us got growing up, and like you said, our parents got and their parents got, we can stop that legacy now and have healthier children to have a better, really, feeling about their own sexuality, their own bodies, and to be able to not have that be a negative impact, some of those messages that we grew up with, and not have to carry that over into their lives as well. So it's really important in so many ways.
I know you, despite your parents, I mean, you talk about this in your book, they had some relationship difficulties, but they were always open about sexuality. And my parents were too. And so probably it's not an accident that we both became sex therapists to help other people be more open and to be. And I am so pleased when I look at my daughter and her two young sons, and that it perpetuates because she's very open with them. And, you know, they'll touch their penises and it's not a big deal. You know? They're
not going to be locked in a closet and grow up with, again, these messages that, sorry, we have a little plane flying over. I'm outside. It's a lovely day here in Southern California. They're not going to grow up with those messages because there's so many messages, and some of them are pretty subtle, like you were talking about. You know, like even boys or men who, as boys and as men, are given the message, well, you're supposed to be thinking about sex. You know, men think about sex every few seconds. That's all they care about. That's all they think about. And so there are men who that is not true for, and they have some shame about, you know, their own sexual desires. So it's not just women who get negative sexual messages. Men get a lot of those, too, about what they're supposed to be and how they should be, and you know, the size of their penis. I mean, there's so many things that we grow up feeling shame around when it comes to our bodies or our sexual desire or lack thereof.
Absolutely. And I had a question from one of my clients, and it was this. When women complain about sex, why don't they at least appreciate that they don't have performance anxiety like men? And I will say this is not necessarily true, that women often feel anxious during sex about performing well. And so typically we've got men who are anxious about getting erect quickly enough, delaying ejaculation, giving their partner a big enough orgasm or facilitating it.
Right.
And women have a version of this anxiety, too. They feel pressured to arouse a man, to get him erect, to give him an orgasm, preferably to have one, yes.
Yeah, all of those things. I think the difference is that it's not so apparent for women, but certainly women have their own issues of shame or performance, or, you know, in that doing mode that we're talking about, anxiety, wanting to be attractive enough. Is their body good enough? And they're worrying about that. Not all women, of course, but many women are worrying about how their body looks, or are they attractive to their partner? And like I said, are they going to please their partner and give them an erection? Are they going to be able to please their partner by having an orgasm? So there's so much. You can see all of the different things that can get in the way of our sexual pleasure. It's almost amazing when you think about all of those things, between all of the negative messages that we get growing up about sex and about our bodies and about all of the things we think we're supposed to be or our partners should be, how we're able to actually relax and enjoy and experience it. But it is doable, but it is also important to really understand and be aware of those negative things that are getting in the way.
Yes, and I think that oftentimes pleasure anxiety translates into, and often this is unconscious, fear of being overwhelmed by sexual excitement. And so if you have, if one of our clients has a history, this is why it's so important for us as sex therapists to gather the history, but if there's a history of shame, like my client who got shut, his father got shut in the closet for when he was discovered masturbating, so when you have this sort of history, it's very difficult to trust oneself to relax and give up control, because there's all this negative shame and anxiety in the past.
Right, because it does require, I think, I believe that, I think you do too, that pleasurable sex, intimate sex, and we can talk about what does make sex pleasurable, right? But certainly that level of intimacy or being able to experience whatever's happening to your body requires that amount of vulnerability. And to let our guard down, to be vulnerable, can be very scary for so many reasons, right? So it could be, like you said, sexual trauma, but it could also be some kind of emotional trauma that you might have experienced as a child, whether it was neglect or abuse. You know, that we've learned to kind of put our guard up. And like you said, we feel like being in control keeps us safe. The unfortunate part about that is, while it does keep some of the negative stuff from coming in, it also prevents the good stuff from coming in or going out as well. So to learn to surrender and let go and be vulnerable, it's risky, but it's worth it. And, of course, you need to know that you're safe, you know, emotionally and physically, which is why I think, you know, partner sex or long-term, even monogamous sex, feeling really intimate and close and safe with someone who you know, I think makes sex, you know, that much more enjoyable, contrary to popular belief, which
that's
is,
true.
Right? The new sex, a new partner. Not that there's nothing exciting about that. It's a different kind of a thing. And I find that in the people that I work with, that it is the opposite that is true. It's when they feel more safe that they're able to just be more vulnerable, when they're feeling loved, when they're feeling beautiful. And you get that from, you know, from a good, healthy, long-term relationship.
Absolutely. So let's just go back a little bit, and because I want to build on what you just said. But you talked about sexual abuse. And so women and men who've been molested as children are very likely to feel some fear during sex, mm-hmm. and they've often learned to cut themselves off from the sensations in their bodies, and they'll often put their minds somewhere else because these early traumas were so frightening, and so escaping from it and not being in their bodies was a safe thing to do, or at least a relief.
Yeah, absolutely, it was a form of survival, right? So it was what they developed and learned to really to be able to survive such a horrific, scary experience. And that is the kind of thing that can carry over into our adult relationships, and not necessarily consciously. It's an automatic, it's a reaction is what it is. And, you know, I always talk about with my clients, whether it is around relationship issues or sexual issues, to learn, you know, what and be aware of what that reactive stuff is. And then to be able to really be aware of it so you can switch it into a place of responsiveness, which is not automatic. It takes some work to be able to do that. But first you have to be aware of when you go to that, you know, that old pattern, that automatic pattern, whether it is putting the guard up or, you know, fighting or basically fighting, flighting, or freezing, right?
So, oh, yes.
Yeah, we do it with sex. We do it in relationships, you know, in the emotional sense as well.
So fighting, flighting, or freezing. I like that final F word that you put on there.
Yeah, it's a good one because don't you find a lot of people do that, right? Because they just sort of, like, they want to say something. Something is uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good. They want to say something, but they find themselves, like, frozen, stuck. And it's like nothing comes out. They don't know what to do. It's just an automatic reaction is what it is. Yeah.
And it keeps them from being in their bodies. And so I think one major way that people hold themselves back for really great sexual pleasure is that they're performance-driven rather than experience-drawn.
I agree, yeah.
And both women and men can be more focused and seem to be more focused on how they appear to their partner than how good it feels to be with him or her. How really
exactly.
Good it feels. Instead of worrying about how do I look?
Yeah, how do I look and is this person happy with me? Am I doing this or that or the other? And again, we do it without even really realizing it. And the good thing about that, and I don't know if you can relate to this, I imagine that you can, is that it never ends. Like, you can continue to expand your, you know, your skills and your ability to be able to be in the moment and to fully experience, you know, whatever it is that's happening to you emotionally and physically, which I, you know, like any skill, you know, you're never done growing or learning. And that's exciting because, again, just to go back to some of those limiting beliefs that we hear, that when you're in a long-term relationship or when you get older, sex goes downhill and it's no longer as enjoyable. And the opposite is true. Right? So if you think about it in the way that we're talking about, that it is something that you can keep expanding. You can keep honing that skill and surrendering and experiencing.
Yes. And then, you know, you and I think, both appreciate David Snarch's, Dr. David Snarch's work, where he was a radical from the beginning. I mean, his message was, I remember hearing him in like 1991 in New Orleans. He was just beginning his career then and thinking, wow, this guy is really, really bright, articulate, and all of that. But he's been a leading figure, and he says great sex is not, as it's usually defined, about having intense orgasms. He says, rather, it's about increasing the capacity for intimacy and eroticism within the context of a committed relationship.
I think it's said so perfectly, and he really was a pioneer in a way, you know, to talk about sex in ways that nobody was before.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that is perfectly said, right? And I think that if people understand that, and because if we don't understand that and we don't believe it and we think the other is true, the things that people tell us, right, then we don't even try. I mean, if we didn't think that it was possible to do whatever that we wanted to do, and if we told ourselves or we got the message that we could never do it, which, let's face it, a lot of us get messages like that growing up too, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
Well, then we don't, right? So it's kind of what you believe, it's true. So it's important that we talk about the reality of it and dispel some of these myths and these ideas and beliefs that are getting in people's way of having a good, enjoyable sex life and relationship because they're very much connected.
Yeah, and I like what Dr. Snarch says, too, about be yourself. Hold on to yourself while simultaneously, and of course, this is the tricky part, to be in a relationship, an intimate, sexually satisfying one, perhaps more charged with the human electricity we call passion than you thought was possible after lots of years with one person. His book, Passionate Marriage, you probably know it, Keeping Love and Intimacy Alive in a Committed Relationship, is really a great book.
You know, it is a good book. I mean, I read it so long ago. And there's so many great books. I find myself going back to them because it's like, oh yeah, I used to recommend this book to clients, and I remember when I read it, but I couldn't actually tell you what's in it. But I'm sure I use a lot of the things that I learned in that book. But it is a great resource for couples, and there's so many great resources out there and books. And like you said, whether it's books or videos. That's another thing, to be able to utilize those resources in a way to start having conversations with your partner that, again, you may want to have or need to have and don't know how to do it, don't even know where to begin. Those are great ways to start that conversation.
That's absolutely true.
And
your book is great because it's very, you know, you've got at the end of each chapter, you've got suggested action steps. I mean, this is a very sort of pragmatic, useful book. And again, listening, it's 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. And people can get that at Amazon or also on your website?
Amazon. Yeah, and you can get it in e-form or you can get it in hardcover. It's a small book, and I'm very proud of it. And the reason why I wrote it is because I find a lot of my clients, they're really not interested in reading a big book with all kinds of theory and all of those things.
That's right.
You want something quick and easy, this will do it. I shouldn't really say easy. It's simple. It's simple, and it's amazing that that's the whole premise of it, right? What one decision can do, followed by an action. Of course, deciding, for me, the definition is, you know, followed by action and commitment. And just one thing. I mean, really, that's all it takes. And I have the book lined where you can read it from front to back, or you can just find one decision that fits, you know, your life that you think could make a difference for you and your partner. And then you can find one action to do that would also work. So it's amazing what one simple, you know, step will do to change your life and change your relationship and your sex life. And so that's why I like it, because people can do it and they just can pick one. They don't have to read a big long book. It's just really getting clear about what you want and making that decision and the commitment to do something differently. And that's hard to do. You know, it seems like so easy, but when you are, as we are as humans, you know, in a habit of doing something, and that's what we call a rut, right? And I think a rut, and this is important to mention, is different than routine, because I think routine can be a wonderful thing in a relationship. But when it's only routine and we kind of get stuck in those patterns, it then can become a rut, which is problematic. So while what we're saying is being in a long-term relationship or getting older, you know, your sex life and your relationship can get better. It's not automatic. It does require really intention and effort to make that happen.
Absolutely. And I'm just looking at your book again. So you have decisions to have fun, to talk, to turn on your senses, to decide to exercise, to make time for sex.
To masturbate, I believe, is one.
Masturbate. Yes, yeah. I skipped over that. Why did I do that? Because that's such a good thing to do.
and that's another myth we believe we have, that that's a bad thing, but it actually can be a healthy thing. It can also be an unhealthy thing, right? So
if for instance, if a guy is spending a lot of time masturbating to porn, that potentially can be unhealthy. especially if he's missing work because of it and that sort of thing. But with low desire women, certainly masturbation can help jumpstart desire.
Absolutely, yeah. There's no question about that. So again, it's really just feeling comfortable with our bodies and knowing our bodies. And if we believe that just, you know, by itself that masturbation is bad, again, either we do it and we feel shame around it, or we don't do it because we feel so uncomfortable, and that means that we're feeling, not necessarily, but it can mean that we're feeling uncomfortable with our sexual urges or our desires and, you know, and our body. So that is one way to get through that. And I think when you think about women's sexual desire, I mean, so much of that gets in the way. Again, messages about our body, what's wrong with our bodies, what's wrong with our sexual feelings. Again, whether it's, we don't have enough desire, we think there's something wrong with us, or we have a lot of desire, we think there's something wrong with us. And, you know, I just need to say it, that there's nothing wrong with anybody. We just are all wired a little differently, and it's figuring out, you know, how we work. That's the important part.
You make a very good point. I read recently about a study that was published in one of our sexual journals that showed that women who were not able to reach orgasm when they were instructed or given suggestions on how to, quote, properly, end quote, masturbate, were much more likely to reach orgasm. And my experience about that is that a lot of women who did not masturbate as teenagers and maybe didn't lay down that network of nerves that go from the genitals to the brain and back again, that they almost always need a vibrator and to stay focused and to be, you know, to spend it, set the scene and to spend at least 20 minutes doing it. And so once they learn how to reach orgasm, they're much more likely to have some desire for sex because the payoff is there.
Well, exactly, right? I mean, if there has been no payoff, or sex has been a source of anxiety or pressure or shoulds or shame, all of those things that we're talking about, and let's face it, there's a lot of women and men who that's been sort of their sexual connections. It hasn't been something that is pleasant. And so when, you know, they start to experience pleasure, and, you know, orgasm is certainly a great pleasure. It's not the only one, but it is a great one for sure. So when we start to experience positive feelings, emotional and physical, well, then guess what? Our desire goes up. We desire what feels good. We desire something that seems, you know, exciting, or that we want, or that, you know, we have an interest in. We don't have any desire for something that hasn't left us feeling very good.
Well, that's an excellent point, of course. Of course. It's obvious, yeah. And I think that, too, if people are having orgasmic, ecstatic sex, there's a lot of oxytocin and endorphins and all of the really good feelings. And, of course, we know from research and maybe even personal experience that the more sex, good sex we have, the more we want.
It's true.
And it's very good for our bodies to have all of those good chemicals, neurochemicals that fight the bad ones that are stress related, the cortisol and the adrenaline.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the oxytocin and you know, it's such a wonderful, testosterone even, all of those wonderful hormones that definitely have a positive impact on us. So it's true, right? It's physiological, it's emotional, it's psychological, it's relational. I mean, there's so many benefits that I think a lot of people, again, when they are, you know, under the impression that, you know, well, let's just get it over with, or this is not really supposed to be all that great, or this is just what happens, then, you know, they don't have all of those pleasant experiences that they could be having, which would make not only sex more pleasurable, but would also increase their desire to have sex, at least the emotional desire. You have to have the emotional desire before you have the physical desire, right?
Absolutely. And that's why it can be important to be, if a woman is low desire for whatever reason, and of course there are many reasons, maybe if she gets quiet with herself and does some meditation or some breathing, that can help a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, I mean, let's talk about that a little bit because that's such an important thing. You know, being able to, you know, to do mindfulness exercises or meditation, what that does is it really trains our brain, right? It teaches us how to be in the moment and how to be out of our head. And we, you know, we both know that when we go in, I'm sure everybody who's listening to this who's ever had sex can relate to it because we all do it, myself included, that when you are having sex and you're in your head, but whatever it might be, it could be thinking about, you know, work, or it could be, again, worrying about what your partner's thinking or doing or trying to perform, you are not going to be able to relax and enjoy and experience. So that is a skill, and a lot of people have trouble with that because we are busy people, and we're used to doing and performing and accomplishing. And so that makes it another reason why sex is important, to have those moments where you don't have to do anything. You get to just be and relax and enjoy and connect. And it's such a sacred place. But many of us don't, well, we'll just, not that we don't know how, but we'll just say it is not a honed skill. We're used to being, you know, the type A personalities.
Yes, and I'm thinking, Laurie, about a client of mine who is in her 30s, single, very successful, and I noticed in session that she often kind of posed her body language. She was almost acting like a vamp, but her family background showed that she had bought into her mother's distrust of men. And so we talked about it. She posed during sex. She held her breath. She kept her buttocks and her thighs tight. She was really afraid of letting go. And she also held her belly really tight as part of the whole pattern of muscle control that she'd been unaware of, but it was keeping her from getting fully aroused sexually. And for her, looking good was, at least until we did some more work together and she practiced it later, but for her, looking good was more important than feeling good.
Wow. Well, and like you said, you know, until she started talking about it with you, she probably wasn't, it sounds like she wasn't aware of it, even aware
she
of
wasn't,
it.
She so, wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, which is why, you know, let's just put it out there. Sometimes therapy, you know, is a needed thing. So, yes, sometimes you can read a book or you can listen to a show and you can get some great ideas and there can be some things that you can do. But sometimes, you know, you do need to speak to a professional and get some therapy. There's some deeper things that you may not even be aware of that might be getting in your way. And again, the most important thing, you can't make any changes unless you're aware of what it is that those things are.
Oh, so true. So true. You know, I know you know about Dr. Jack Marin, and he died like last year, and I was so sad about that.
I didn't know that. I
you didn't?
Know that.
He died of cancer.
Oh, he was, oh, and it's funny because I was talking about rereading books. I was recently started rereading The Erotic Mind. Such a great
The Erotic
book.
Mind, which I read, 15, 20 years ago, and it just resonated so much. But but what he did, he investigated sexual potential and peak sexual experiences. He didn't look at all the negative stuff that went on.
Right. Yeah.
So he really, he contributed in a lot of ways about, let's look at pleasure, let's look at sexual potential. And mm-hmm. So because really, reaching your pleasure potential in sex involves becoming more expansive on many different levels, more expansive. And back to your point about sex therapy, if people can sort through these things and reduce the shame and the anxiety, then they have an opportunity to be more expansive, sexually expansive.
Exactly, and that's why a trained sex therapist is a good idea. And I'm not saying that there aren't therapists out there who are may not be certified or have the credentials of sex therapists who wouldn't be helpful. But for the most part, what we do is we don't pathologize any sexual feelings, and we do concentrate not just on the things that are getting in the way, but as importantly, maybe even more importantly, to be able to explore the things that are exciting and arousing and pleasurable.
Well, yes, and that's because we're both very sex-positive therapists, and there's probably no other way to be an effective sex therapist.
Right, yeah. It is important that somebody go, if you're going to go to a therapist around sexual issues, that you go to somebody who is trained in that area. And, you know, the best way to do that is to go to asect.org, which has a list of, and I think there's another one too, you might have another resource too, where you know that there are people, these people are trained, they're certified, and, you know, that they can help you. And when you go to the website ASECT, it's AASECT.org, you can look up by zip code or by city, or country, even, you know, for a therapist that's in your area.
So it's a great resource. I often suggest it. And we go to ASEC conferences, American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Teachers, is what the acronym stands for. We go to conferences, we get our CEs, our continuing education, and sometimes we even have fun at these conferences, right?
Oh, I don't think there's ever been a time we haven't.
Yeah. I remember going back a few years ago watching you, Dr. Lori, really break out on the dance floor.
Well, you know, that's probably the only time I do it, conferences or weddings, right? That's about it these days.
Oh, okay.
No more clubbing. So it's good to let loose. And there's always, you know, good speakers. And look, there's always new things to learn. I learn new things all the time. And, you know, if it's something that interests you, whether, you know, it's your relationship or sex, there's always, you know, good things out there, good resources, good books. Of course, there's some that are not so good either. So, you know, it's kind of hard to be discerning sometimes. But there's no reason to stop learning or to stop growing or to stop enjoying sex, whether you've been in a relationship for many years or whether you are, you know, in your 60s or 70s or even your 80s or your 90s. You know, I have some clients in their 70s. I've never had a client in their 80s yet, but I'm sure it'll happen.
But, I hope so, yes.
Yeah.
Me neither, but I've had clients in their 70s. And their quality of life is so much better enhanced once they can get back on this having sex again. And even if it doesn't necessarily include intercourse. I don't know about you, but I get my clients to say not sex, but intercourse, because sex can be so much more than intercourse.
Exactly, and when they say sex, that's usually what they mean. And I always ask them, like, what do you mean when you say sex? And then they'll usually say intercourse. I'm like, well, okay, so intercourse, yeah, intercourse is great, and it's intercourse, but it's not the only way to have sex. There's lots of different ways to have sex. So it, again, I think that is freeing, right? Again, if we feel like we're supposed to look this way, And let's face it, we all get that message, right? There's supposed to be a little foreplay. And why do we have foreplay? So we can have intercourse. And why do we have intercourse? So both people can come, ideally at the same time, you know, and then we're done. And that's been a successful sexual experience. But, you know, that seems pretty limiting to me.
Well, it is limiting, and also, well, you know the old saying, men are like microwaves, and women are more like crockpots or slow-cooking ovens.
And there is definitely a lot of truth in that. There's so much truth in that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's, you know, when we understand these things, while they're generalities, they are, you know, more often than not true. And so when we can understand that, rather than thinking that there's something wrong with us or there's something wrong with our partner or why should we or why aren't we, you know, basically all the shoulds and the shame, it gets in the way of us being able to just be in the moment. So when we just sort of understand it, accept it, that we're all built differently, and yes, oftentimes we can say men and women because there are a lot of differences between men and women, but there's so many differences between people generally, and it's not about comparing yourself to anybody, but just understanding how you work and letting your partner know that, and vice versa. So you two, I would say, to learn to dance together. You learn to dance together. And
I like
with
that.
Just total acceptance. There's no right, wrong, good, or bad. It's just we're all different, you know, and again, letting go of any shoulds or any pressure or any of that is going to make a big, big difference in our relationship for sure, but also, of course, in our sex life.
Really, it's so true. So being in the moment, you know, many people get into the habit of having sex while they're thinking about something else entirely, and it's a big...
Right.
Big thing to undermine pleasure and intimacy. So I suggest to my clients that they focus on the physical sensations. What specifically are you feeling in your arms, legs, genitals, fingertips? What do you smell? What do you taste? So you can really soak up the emotional experience.
That's such great advice. Absolutely, yeah. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of us learn how to sort of shut some of those things down in our normal life. We would feel overwhelmed, but it's a time to just relax and to be able to experience that. Because you think about it, all of our senses give us, I mean, that's what pleasure is about. You think about eating, right? Just eating food. I mean, it's the way it looks and the way it tastes and the way it
mm-hmm.
smells and the way it feels. And you know, we can eat a meal like that and it can be so enjoyable, or we can eat a meal and not even know that we're eating it. We can just be completely, you know, somewhere else. And it's the same thing with sex. And it's not necessarily automatic. I mean, I even find myself sometimes, you know, when I'm having sex, thinking about something. But what I now do, which I think is a first step for a lot of people, is just know that you're doing it. I mean, so many people do it automatically, they're not even aware of it. So just to be aware of it when you do get distracted and you're in your head, whatever that might be, and, you know, to acknowledge it, and this is what mindfulness is, right? To acknowledge it without judgment, no judgment, just, you know, curiosity. It's interesting, I'm thinking about that right now. And go back to, like you were saying, focusing on those sensations, on how it feels, and that'll get you back in the moment. But we all do it. We all get distracted. But the first step really is to just know that we're doing it.
Know that we're doing it. And as you said, don't make judgments about it, but acknowledge it. You know, when people are learning how to do meditation, if there's a Zen overlay, they talk about the monkey mind. So you've got those little monkeys out on the branch, and they're jumping around and they're trying to distract you. So you reach out and you quiet the monkey mind down, quiet down, and then come back to center. An alternate approach to that, and I give this to some of my clients, is to see a stop sign. Just to see a stop sign. Stop. Okay, now come back to center. And a lot of, especially women, you know, we women have a bigger corpus callosum, that connecting tissue between the right and left hemisphere. So, and I think that we were, from an evolutionary point of view, we were given a bigger corpus callosum because we have to access the right and left hemispheres. If we're having sex and we have a baby, we have to hear the baby cry.
Exactly.
So, but that multitasking does not work well. Back when I lived in Los Angeles and back when I got to see you more, Lori, I worked at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center, and the female urologist I worked with actually prescribed Ritalin for some of her patients to help them focus. And I thought, ooh, this is, I don't think this is necessary. It's too strong a drug. I mean, we can talk about it and do some of these other little mind techniques, right?
Exactly. But the concept is the same. It's just the treatment is different, right? The medical doctors, we got the psychologists, and we have a different idea. But the concept is the same, right? So is it true that we can get distracted or it's difficult for us to just be, you know, present in the moment? And, you know, we were talking before, a lot of that has to do with our past. But it is how we're wired as humans, right? Because we are wired for survival. So if we had to have more survival or coping mechanisms growing up for whatever reason, and we all have to have some, then we sort of become wired that way. But the good news is that we now know that through these, you know, mindfulness or meditation practices or just experiencing things in a different way, we can change that we can actually change our wiring, and we can learn to be in the moment, and we can learn to experience more sexual pleasure as well.
So the amygdala is the part of the brain that houses fear and anxiety. And as I understand it, people who've had trauma in their past, their amygdalas are often a little extra reactive because they've been overwired, or I don't know how to describe it exactly.
We'll just say they have sensitive amygdala.
Okay, that's very good. Sensitive amygdala. All right, I'm making a note of that. But knowing it, and you've touched on this before, Lori, that just knowing that, having the information, having the awareness then can help you quiet down your fears by talking back to them. And then we're back to feeling, which we talked about at the beginning of the show, being able to feel safe with a partner. Sometimes that is the most important thing, and why a committed relationship may be good for people with some trauma in their past, because they've got to feel safe for them to let go, for them to surrender, for the woman to have an orgasm, so on.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, all of those things. And some of it is trusting our partner, and some of it is trusting ourselves.
Yes, yes. Talk about that a little bit more, if you will.
There are a lot of people who say, you know, in my practice, I'll talk to a lot of women, and they go, yeah, I'm definitely safe. Like, I know he would do anything for me. He would never hurt me. I know it is entirely safe. But they need to also, so they may trust him, but they need to trust themselves that if they let their guard down, that they're going to be okay. And so that is that practice. It's understanding when you, again, being aware of when you put that guard up, when you go into protective mode. You have to be aware that you're doing it. And again, take that risk by letting it go and knowing that you are going to be okay. And that's just trusting ourselves. And that takes some practice. That is in the doing. It's in the practice being the key word. In the practicing of it, that we start to get stronger and feel better.
That is very good, and I bet your clients really appreciate that sort of advice. But it does take practice, until you know that it's going to be really okay, you really will be safe, you really can let go, you really can surrender. And, of course, that's at the basis of a woman achieving orgasm.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
To surrender,
so
to let go.
Yeah, intellectually people know, like they might say, well, intellectually I know that nothing's going to happen to me. I know that I'm safe. But again, it's that wiring, right? It's
mm-hmm.
an automatic. That's where the amygdala comes in too. It's just
right.
It's automatic. It's so automatic. And the only way to again, to begin to affect some change is to first be aware of when that happens, or be aware of when we put that guard up, be aware of when we go into fear mode. We all get afraid. We all have coping skills. And that they all worked for us at one time, but they don't necessarily work for us now. And so we first have to be aware that it's happening. And then through great effort and intention, we can start to change that. We can learn to relax and experience and let go and surrender and enjoy. And that's true not just of sex. It's also true of intimacy, which can be very scary.
You say it very well. Yeah, very, very well. And so I try to get my couples to ask some questions after they've made love, and that kind of go away from the performance thing, right? Was it enjoyable? Did you feel close to each other?
Mm-hmm.
How can you make it even better next time?
Good questions.
Yeah, because in the spirit, you know, you're less likely to worry about success or failure and more likely to appreciate really the rich range of experiences that sex has to offer. We all are happier if we're having, I'm just going to say it, we're all happier if we have a rich, enjoyable, satisfying sex life.
I think so. I think it sort of balances out the playing field in our relationships. What I mean by that is,
mm-hmm.
you know, relationships are or can be, and for most people, you know, they are challenging at times. You know,
mm-hmm.
living with another person who isn't ourselves, although if it was ourselves, that would be problematic too. It's not easy. You know, they may not put the dishes in the dishwasher the way you like, or you know, or discipline, because you know, people always talk about that, or discipline the kids the way that, you know, you do, or, you know, fill in the blanks, watch the TV shows you do. It can be challenging. And they, you know, talk about, you know, pushing those amygdala buttons. Our loved ones can do that more than anybody. So when we have those sacred moments to connect on a really deep level, it does, you know, carry over into our relationship and vice versa, of course. You know, when we have a fun, connected, you know, supportive relationship, we definitely have better sex. And, you know, I think one of the tips, I think, you know, men, when they want tips, like, how can I get her to want sex more, and how can I make it better? You know, one of the best things that, I don't even know if this is on topic, but it just occurred to me, it's such an important thing. One of the best things a man can do is let his partner know, and I know, again, I just have to mention, while we're talking very heterosexually, this is often true, more often than it isn't, just as true in same-sex relationships. So this
yes.
can be for, you know, for male-male or female-female relationships or something in between. So that is important. But for women and men specifically, when a woman feels beautiful and loved,
yeah,
you know, that's like the best seducer of all. Because, again,
yeah.
many women walk around not feeling shame. I mean, feeling shame, not feeling loved, or not feeling good about themselves or secure about their bodies. And so when we feel loved and beautiful, and men, you know, if you have a man who is your partner who is good at that, chances are that they're having better sex. It's just really a good thing. And for men, of course, I think, again, this is, of course, very general stuff, but, again, that doesn't make it less true. For a man to really feel seen and appreciated is also really important.
And for the man to feel, I like that very much. Yeah, women are often feeling insecure about their bodies, so I think this is just perfect, Dr. Lori, you know, that for the man to let his partner know that you know, you're beautiful, and I love you
yeah.
so much. I cherish you. I'm not... You know, women are often thinking, well, not maybe often, but many women are thinking, I'm somehow my body isn't just right and I'm imperfect. And so for the man to reassure, there have been some studies that show that the man might look at her visually for about 2 minutes, and then he's just so happy to have her there naked and responsive.
It's true. We're much more critical. And it is true that we are all imperfect, and in spite of that, or maybe because of it, we are beautiful. So just because we have imperfections doesn't make us less beautiful, because we all are imperfect.
Right.
In our being and in our bodies, and I think this ideal of perfectionism is so problematic, whether it's, you know, how we look or how we quote-unquote perform. And I just want to go back to what you said before, because I thought it was so important when you were talking about those questions that you have, you know, your couples ask one another, you know, such important questions. And as you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, I think what those questions are doing, which is why it's so brilliant that you have them ask these, is it's really redefining what success is. You know, did you have a good time? Was it enjoyable? Did you feel close? I mean, if that's success, which I think it is, that does change a lot about, you know, what we're focusing on while we're having sex. Success isn't, did I last long enough? Did you have an orgasm? Was it a good enough orgasm? Those weren't those questions. The questions that you have them ask, that's what we're striving for, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. So we take the emphasis off performance and more back on experience and intimacy. We're having physical intimacy, and then when you ask those kinds of questions, you get more back into emotional intimacy, too.
Just the questions themselves are intimate.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love it. You have such great things. I always learn things when I speak to you.
Well, I love speaking with you, and fortunately, we're going to do another show on June the 16th, so we'll have part two. I had Dr. Lori on the program last summer, and then we met up when Brian, my fiancé, and I were in Los Angeles. We had lunch on with Lori and her partner, Alan, lunch on the water. In Santa Monica. It was so beautiful, wasn't it?
It was perfection.
Yeah.
The company, the ambiance, the food, it was amazing. Yeah.
I'm so grateful that I have friends and colleagues, and then I can bring them on this radio program. It's just all wonderful. So I want to tell people to go to, and I'll put this up in the write-up, which will be up shortly, and then there'll be an archived version of this show, well, no later than tomorrow, because Progressive Radio Network, of course, is in New York City, so it's later. It's 3 hours later there. So,
they're ahead of us, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So people will go to Dr. Lori Buckley, BUCKLEY.com. And Lori, we'll talk again on June 16th. Thank you so much.
And if the listeners, I don't know if we have enough time, but if the listeners want to ask us questions, email questions to you.
Yes, right. Very good, Lori. Thank you so much again.
Thank you, Diana. It's been a pleasure.